One of the central voices in the aftermath of this tragedy has been Democratic State Representative Jennifer Longden. She was about to start her first term in office when the news broke about the birth of this baby boy at Hacienda, and it hit home. Longden was shot in 2004 in a random drive-by shooting that left her paralyzed. It changed the course of her life. She went from successful businesswoman to losing her health insurance and struggling to stay afloat. She has been an advocate for disability rights ever since. And when the Hacienda story came to light, she knew she had to take action.
You know, we tend to use words like unthinkable and unspeakable. And until we do think of it and speak of it, especially within this body, the House and the Senate, then folks are going to continue to need relief, need help. And so we must speak of it. We must think of it, and we must act.
I met her yesterday in the members' lounge of the House of Representatives as she was in between boats, and we began by talking about her initial reaction to this Hacienda case. Unlike most of us, Longden was angry, but she was not necessarily surprised.
As a person who lives with a disability, and I've spent time in residential facilities, I wasn't shocked to know about it. I was certainly, like everyone else, saddened, sickened, angered, but I'm not surprised. We know that this happens with a high level of frequency to individuals with disabilities or vulnerable adults. So our seniors, children who live in residential facilities also face abuse at higher levels than one would see in the typically able population.
So this really kind of threw the issue of disability rights and advocacy into the spotlight and the abuse of people with disabilities, like you said. You've been an advocate for this for a long time. I wonder if you can see this in any way as, at least if there's anything that's good to come out of this, an opportunity to have this conversation.
It's hard to say something good is coming out of something so horrific, but this particular incident and the coverage of it certainly did, you know, rip the cover off of this issue at an important time. And I think that my being here in the legislature at this moment allowed me to speak to this as an issue in a way that others perhaps weren't prepared to do. You know, I'm already deeply connected into this community, and so I already knew where to go and who to talk to and how to plug in. I'm grateful that so many other legislators are working on this. You know, I'm having the great privilege of working directly with Senator Carter. I've had conversations with Senator Bartow. I've talked with Senator Brophy McGee. Many of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle have been really very invested in this as an issue.
I want to talk about some of the legislation that's being proposed in a moment, but first let's talk about the gaps that you think exist. Like, when you look at the way the system functions now, how is it possible that this happened, I guess, to begin with? Like, are there things that are obvious things that need to be changed?
So it's not how is it possible that it happened, because when you look at the system, you see that it's rife for opportunities for these types of abuses. So we have brought stakeholders together. There have been stakeholders meeting on this before Hacienda came to light. And, you know, we've uncovered several issues that I think we can work on right away. Senator Carter is dealing with the carve-out that happened some years ago for ICF intermediate care facilities. I have bills that we're going to be introducing on education around abuse and how mandated reporting works, because we have a different standard for mandated reporting for vulnerable adults compared to mandated reporting for children. And because of that, there are opportunities for people to slip through the cracks, so we're looking to fix that. APS, not the electric company, Adult Protective Services, is not a 24-hour service. It's only available during business hours, regular business hours. So if an assault happens to a vulnerable adult at the end of the work week and we're going into a long holiday weekend, there is no one to respond until Tuesday. We have to do better. We have vulnerable adults who rely on us for their well-being, for their dignity, and for their care, for their safety. And we must do better for these people who rely on us.
That's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, was the difference between the way the system approaches vulnerable adults versus vulnerable children, and how different the regulations are there and the laws are there and protections are there. Why do you think that is?
So I don't want in any way to convey or send a message that adults with disabilities or our seniors are not able to exercise their own agency. With that said, when adults find themselves in vulnerable situations, we're not prepared from a policy stance to offer them the assistance they need because we see them as adults and they are adults. And so there's this divide, there's this imbalance that we need to address.
The other one I want to talk about is your bill to create a position that's like an ADA coordinator statewide. Lots of cities have this. What do you think adding a statewide coordinator would do?
Well, this is to reinstate the statewide ADA coordinator. We had one many years ago, and Governor Brewer eliminated the position, along with many at that level, when we had our economic turndown during the Great Recession. One of the things that I think happened, because we don't have a statewide ADA coordinator, is a few years ago we had those frivolous lawsuits that hurt small business, and while they were hurting small business, they also hurt the disability community. So I believe that had this position been in place during that time, that individual would have had the broader view to see this coming and work with small businesses to help them avoid the extortion lawsuits that came out of that.
You also have a bill that is sort of like a patient's bill of rights equivalent, but it's for victims of sexual assault. What is it you're trying to accomplish there?
Well, once again, Arizona does not fund comprehensive rape crisis services. And so while there is a patchwork of services available for individuals who experience sexual assault, and let's talk about what that is. That's 1 in 6 men, 1 in 4 women. And if you have a disability, it's 4 out of 5 people. So this is a big issue and one that needs to be dealt with. So there is a backlog of rape crisis kits. There is a lack of understanding of what one's rights or options are as a victim of sexual assault. And until we have comprehensive rape crisis services, I'm hoping this is one of the things that we can do to help solve that issue and bring some relief to people who have been victimized in horrible ways.
When you look at the broader system and the issues that this case has brought to light, what do you think needs to change on a broader level?
Well, I think that we do need to create awareness. We do need to create a framework of policy and law to ensure that people don't fall through the cracks. And education is an important component. In terms of the sexual assault matter that we now refer to as Hacienda, I have a bill that is currently being worked on. I'm looking for co-sponsors right now, and that will address education. And it will seek to get the appropriate stakeholders to the table and in the process work to define what sexual assault looks like, especially in individuals who receive intimate care. That line can get blurred and you're unsure where it is. So define what sexual assault looks like, how to recognize the signs, what to do if you suspect it, and where to go if you need help. And that's one of the biggest things I think we can do.
Representative Jennifer Longden, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lauren. I've appreciated our time together.